Support for Rick Wilson's The Enemies List comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Wilson. That's odoo.com/Wilson. Odoo. Modern management made simple.
Resolute Square.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which is rather extensive and continually being updated.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
No, it's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List. Our guest today on The Enemies List is Barbara Comstock. Like me, Barbara comes from the 1.0 generation of real Republicans and conservatives back in the day, and we now find ourselves in a very brave new strange world. Barbara is an attorney, was a famously effective researcher, advocate, and attorney inside the Republican Party. Both of us have spent some time in the RNC over our careers, and I wanted to start, Barbara, with that question. First, thanks for coming on the show, and second, both of us as RNC veterans, I can't imagine the feeling of the people that have worked so hard for so long there, watching in the last 5 or 6 days, everything in that building get burned to the ground.
Exactly. I mean, it really is sad. I mean, the only good part about it is I think it will be very ineffective. You know, I mean, aside from badly singing Tom Petty songs, I can't imagine Laura Trump being in charge of that building. It's just, it really is sad. But I think you already see money wasted with people like the Bob person, who is the lawyer who's going to be in charge of...
I wanted to say Lorena Bobbitt, but that's not that.
She's going to be in charge of election integrity when she was one of the ones who was out doing the Stop the Steal. So one of my parts now in my life is working with a bipartisan group that actually started before 2020 to deal with, you know, sort of this election denial problem. And we never dreamed it would get so dramatically horrible. But the idea that you'd put somebody like that in the RNC really makes a joke of it. But it also means they're going to be wasting a lot of resources on not winning an election. So there's that upside.
Yeah, it is an upside. I mean, but they fired all the digital department. They fired the research people. They fired the political department. They fired the early vote, all the early voting and absentee chase folks. And it's left with raising money for Trump. It's left with being a funnel back to the Trump organization.
And of course, as you know, that isn't what it's supposed to do. I mean, famously in 1996, I mean, we all love Bob Dole. I do. But you know, when it was apparent his race, you know, he wasn't going to win, you know, Haley Barbour, you know, went back, you know, we had just won the majority in the House. He reinforced and did all, you know, helped everybody win in the House races to hold the House because we had, you know, just taken the House in 1994. So you have to have some independence to be able to make those type of decisions. And there's no longer any independence. It's just going to be dedicated to Trump, which means there will be a lot of down ballot problems, I think. And so I think if you're somebody running for the House or the Senate, you are orphans. I mean, you do have the NRCC and the NRSC, but you aren't going to have any kind of help from the RNC.
I think people underestimate the effectiveness of what the party built up, especially in the times that you were there, where it was this capacity, this ability to expand the capacity of what the party could do for people in the states and across different domains. And in all that time, you look at it and you're just like, they're burning it down just to make make money for Trump at the moment. It's an astounding.
Well, if it makes money for Trump sort of and the grifters, instead of winning an election, then democracy will be saved. And so you have to look at the bright side on that. But for
you have one of my favorite quotes ever about Donald Trump. You called him the patron saint of sore losers. I've always loved that. I don't think I've ever told you that, but that quote particularly, I was always like, that is right on the money. So speaking of which, and I don't know if the folks know your history, but you were inside the Republican consulting world and the Republican activist world. And then you ran for the Virginia House of, I guess, the delegates. Yep,
General
Assembly,
House of Delegates.
And General Assembly. And so you were there for a couple terms, and then you were in the U.S. House in Northern Virginia, famously swing seat, moderate district. And you were one of the folks who in 2018 ran into that first wave of pushback against Trump and Trumpism. And you went from being an effective and popular and really good member of Congress to someone who just couldn't overcome that tidal wave of the trouble he brought to the Republican candidates. Where do you see Virginia headed in the future? I mean, I know Youngkin won, but that was often or largely, I think, because he could write a big check all the time. Where do you see Virginia heading in this sort of after the post-Trump damage and as we go into the future?
Well, yeah, no, the post-Trump damage. I mean, that seat, my old seat had been a Republican seat since 1980, but it always had been a swing seat, and it was very challenging. Lots of
It was Frank Wolf, right, yeah. Before that?
Yeah,
I
and
love
then
Frank.
Part of the district, because of redistricting, also with Tom Davis. So, you know, mm-hmm. those are, you know, both people who had to, you know, you're dealing with federal employees, with government contractors, with a big tech industry. But actually, part of my district also had a lot of agriculture and wineries and lots of other interesting things. So it was very diverse district that really, I always felt it really kind of reflected kind of the whole country in one place, you know, very, you know, kind of the whole melting pot demographically too. So, you know, that Republicans were able to hold this area was great. I mean, I had won my first race in 2014 by 16 points. And then when I was on the ballot with Trump in 2016, it went back down to 6. I mean, we thought we were goners. I mean, I said, first of all, Trump was on the ballot. Secondly, I said, I'm not going to support him. When the access, I had not said I would support him. And then when the Access Hollywood tape came out, I said, okay, I'm out. And I've been out ever since. But those kind of districts, I think all across the country, are the districts that Trump has lost and that we no longer have in the caucus, which is, you know, you have such a narrow Republican majority right now. Really, most of the people in there are from red districts. And so they don't have that sense of what life is like in a swing district where you have to be adding to your coalition, not subtracting and dividing like Trump does. So I think, you know, I always spent my elections figuring out how do you get that extra 5-6%, and you don't get it with Trump. So as for Virginia, you know, I think, you know, Glenn was, I knew Glenn, he had been a supporter and helpful. And he was, you know, a very, you know, charismatic candidate, ran on his own, did not ask for Trump's endorsement. When Trump realized he was going to win, Trump did what Trump does, is jump in and try and claim credit, even though everyone had kind of stayed out of the Trump race, both the primary, you know, getting Trump endorsements, both in the primary and even in the general. And Terry McAuliffe, though, Democrats were kind of tired of Terry. So it was very, it was a narrow win. But I would point out that Glenn actually did better in a lot of the red areas, which I've never really drilled down into it, but I do think it's because he did better with women, not just in the suburbs, where he did do better in areas like mine, but he still didn't win them. You know, he certainly didn't win Northern Virginia, but he did well enough up in Northern Virginia. Yeah, but then he also did better in the red areas, and people often miss that. Like Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas won with bigger margins than Trump wins in Arkansas, bigger margins than Sarah Huckabee won in Arkansas, because, again, he was a conservative, but he added to you know, his coalition, and that's what's been lost, I think, in the whole Trump mess, and why he lost in 20, and God bless him, he had horrible Mark Meadows, worst chief of staff in history, who helped him do that. And but now I do think, even though it's going to be close, I think things like the Swazi race, which was he was a friend of mine on my friend. I mean, we were on the same aisle there, you know, in Congress, and he was a great guy, you know, kind of moderate. What you see why he won. But there's only a few people who kind of understand the rhythm of those swing states and swing districts, and they are not running the Trump campaign. They are not running the party anymore. And certainly Laura Trump is not one of them.
Support for Rick Wilson's The Enemies List comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Wilson. That's odoo.com/Wilson. Odoo, modern management made simple.
But yeah, I just, as I said a few weeks ago, I'm like, I would not put Laura Trump in charge of running the roller meat station at a Wawa. I just, you can't, the woman's just like, there's no political engagement there or understanding of all the very consequential things that we're going to end up facing. And, you know, I think that there's a degree of nepotism and however else you want to phrase it, that truly doesn't get us to a point where you know you're going to have anything in there, but like I said, a sort of blowout sale.
Oh, but I should mention, because you asked what's going to happen to Virginia, Nikki Haley did win. You know, fortunately, you know, my precinct, my area, so I can go to the grocery store, and as Bill Kristol said, we can, you know, be happy here that we had somebody. So it shows that now that's within the party. Now whether you know in a general election, it's still. You know, Virginia will not be in play. I mean, I hope, as Trump has claimed he's going to do, I hope they waste money here, because once you tell all the federal employees that he wants to fire all of you at will.
Right. And replace you with Steve Bannon's friends.
Or, you know, the government contractors who, you know, with his shutdowns and all those things made their life miserable. I mean, that's why, you know, in 18, I literally had people walking by me saying, "Hey, Barbara, it's nothing personal. You've done a great job, but this is a message to Trump." And I was like, "Hey, I get it." You know, and then it got him impeached. So, you know, there's a lot of good there for that. And with this group and what they've done with, you know, anybody who kind of stands up to Trump, what they did to Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, you know, you see so many people walking away and not wanting to be there because of that. But I think, that's why I think it's so important with this election that Trump be gone. And then once he's gone, it's going to be for some future leaders, not the people who have already been out there, but I think a lot of the future leaders probably in the states, state legislators, people who've actually been solving problems, those are the people that I think will lead the recovery.
I think you're right. And I think it's interesting that Nikki Haley, I don't know about you, but I started hearing from people I hadn't talked to in a few years who were like, maybe there's some daylight here. Maybe there's hope. Maybe people are getting it. Maybe slowly but surely. And she didn't get there, but it did rattle a few cages. And look, the fact that she still got 13.7% of the vote in Georgia and won in two counties that Donald Trump has to crush it in 2024, I think there are some alarm bells for the Trump movement out there in the wind.
Well, there should be. I mean, 77,000 votes for Nikki Haley, and we have been permanently banned. I mean, you know, I supported, you know, Asa Hutchinson. I supported Chris Christie. And I was really happy where Nikki Haley really moved to throughout the campaign, and where I think she really got back to being herself and being comfortable. And she always was, I think, the best sort of political athlete of them all. You know, when she came in, she was part of that group of Republicans that wanted to grow the coalition, you know, talk about things in an inclusive way, but still be conservative. And she was effective at that. And she had, you know, taking down the Confederate flag in South Carolina. She famously in 16 stood there with Marco Rubio and Tim Scott and Trey Gowdy saying, hey, we're not going Trump. And I thought that was the future of the party. Now I think probably we need four people like that who are state legislators who can look at the wreckage and come back from that and say, yeah, it's, you know, and that Reagan-esque supporting our allies and supporting Ukraine and, you know, the things that Nikki was so good at articulating and why it's important for the U.S. to support Ukraine. It's important so that our men and women aren't going to be fighting there. It's important. I mean, look, it's even economically beneficial to us. So it's foolish for all for these Republicans who have many of these districts with, you know, defense, you know, lots of defense contracts there.
Right. And 85% of the money is being spent here in the U.S. You know, kind of amazing. So, Barbara, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something that you mentioned in passing. You're working with the Bipartisan National Council on Election Integrity to try to push back on a lot of the disinformation and the misinformation and the conspiracy theories and the undermining of our electoral process, which, you know, if people don't believe in it, it's a danger, I think, to the country at a really high level. Tell us a little bit about the work you guys are doing and how that started.
I got involved with it the summer before 2020, and I think it started before that. It's Zach Womp and Tim, Republican from Tennessee, very conservative. Tim Romer, moderate Democrat from Indiana. He also was an ambassador to Indiana, to India. And then Donna Edwards, who was a colleague and friend when I was in Congress, and she's from Maryland. And then we have a lot of also former members on our board, people act, and then we have state election officials who are involved, both former and current, who kind of inform and help us. And so a lot of it is, well, right now we're trying to get money for the budget to support our local elections. Unfortunately, it looks like the budget might erase that. So we are very concerned about that. So, tell people, anyone listening, please call your congressman, Republicans, saying, you know, if you really care about these things, you know, you need more money for your local election officials, because a lot of the wreckage of the Trump, you know, false election lies is that there's a lot of need for additional help and assistance now, because you have a lot of people who've quit across the country. We're concerned about that. But we also have some really great people who have gotten involved, and we're just trying to educate voters. But also when you bring it down to the local level, people usually trust their local officials. One thing I will give credit to Virginia, because last year we had very close elections, both our Democrat chairman, our Republican chairman, as well as our governor went out and said, even though we ended up, 51-49 in the state house, 21-19 in the Senate, went Democrat, not Republican, as Republicans went. We didn't have any sore losers. No one was paying homage to that patron saint of sore loserhood, Donald Trump. And they really, you know, the governor really made an effort, and the party chairs really made an effort to go out and say, we had clean elections. This was fair. Some of them were very close, got down to, you know, handful of votes, the kind of races. I mean, I won my first race by 422 votes, so I know what that's like. But so we want to focus on the local, because people trust their local election officials. I think Stephen Risher out in Arizona has been one of the best people in doing this. You know, he had all those battles with Trump and with Carrie Lake, but he's still out there, Maricopa County. And he invites people in to like tour and show them how everything works, have them do question and answer sessions. And after they kind of poll them before and after on their concerns about election security. And after they've gotten the informational tour, they get to ask all their questions. They really trust the system, and they trust their neighbors who are implementing it. And they understand it's Democrats and Republicans working together. And, you know, that's what we have to do, you know, to make it, you know, try and bring down that problem. But another thing I'll give credit to my friend Adam Kinzinger, Country First in 2022 was very active on the secretaries of state races, which are very involved in the elections. And you saw those, you know, when they tried to go after Brad Raffensperger in Georgia and other states. Right now, in all those swing states, we have non-election denying officials. Most of them, it's Democrats. It's Brad Raffensperger in Georgia. In Pennsylvania, the Governor Shapiro, a Democrat, appointed a Republican official who famously did stand up to Trump and say, hey, Pennsylvania, our elections are clean. Stop attacking them. So in an effort to make this bipartisan, Governor Shapiro, I think, really made a great move on that front, because in his state, he gets to appoint. Other states, they're elected. But in Michigan, it's a Democrat. I guess in Nevada, it is too. So, yeah, so that's going to be make things much better in 2024 in terms of harassment. But these people are still threatened. I mean, we all know about the death threats. People who've resigned because of those, really, really traumatic things that have happened to election workers and election officials who don't have the power that elected officials or even former elected officials have to get the microphone and make an impact. So we really try and stand up for them, because they're, you know, some of them had to move, you know, in Arizona, they had to move to other homes because their kids were threatened. They were threatened. Their lives were threatened. And then again, in 2022, when Carrie Lake, who hopefully, well, I'm pretty confident she won't be winning, but she'll. So that's another one we'll be working to make sure she doesn't win.
One of my favorite races in 22, at Lincoln, we did a lot of state secretary of state things and focus on a lot of, like, what are the consequential races for that? One of my favorite races was beating the heck out of Mark Fincham. That guy was just so egregious, such a denier, such a weirdo, and with an undercurrent of, like, violence, if I don't win message to people sometimes, that was really honestly pretty creepy. But I think what you guys are doing there is really important.
Yeah. And it's really trying to build that trust back up, and then having more people, you know, we try and pair up and go out and really, you know, stress how much, you know, we're working in that. Now it would help if we'd get the reinforcements from Congress for the money, because, like, let's give you an example. In Tennessee, they had a lot of the counties, they had those, I think it was Dominion voting machines, or it was one of the voting machines that got attacked. So if I'm not exactly right on these, I'm just giving a general problem, but they got rid of a lot of their machines, even though Tennessee had overwhelmingly voted for Trump. But because of this, you know, fanaticism and attacks that obviously, you know, Fox News paid that case with Dominion, and they're still in another lawsuit. But by getting rid of all of these machines in Tennessee, except for one county where actually Zach Womp has a son who said, no, we're not going to get rid of our machines. They work fine. But just all the money that has been wasted by election. But that's why huge, when you look at what amount. The RNC is doing, the fact that they're going to keep playing that game, part of it is so when Trump loses, they can say rigged, rigged, rigged. But also what they're missing the boat on is, hey, let's keep it quiet, right? We don't need to tell them, is that they're wasting money because our elections already work very well.
They really do. And I mean, as a Florida guy, you know, I was with the RNC and Bush in 2000. We came here in Florida and it was a train wreck, and the state was embarrassed how bad it was.
There. All these,
I know, I remember a million different systems. And now Florida, I mean, legitimately over the last 25 years has built one of the most bipartisan and smooth and effective election counting systems in the country. We count the absentees ahead of time. Everything's done by 8 o'clock at night. It's all done. Everybody goes home and has a beer. We know who the winners and losers are.
And Pennsylvania still won't do that. And it's Republican.
I know.
And it's
maddening.
It is very frustrating because, again, they'll build up those, you know, you'll have people. Well, of course, all those conspiracy theories have been knocked down by lawyers, by all those cases. And, you know, but now to have,
other thing. But they think, oh, the red wave, that the first set of votes they see, they're like, okay, it's in the bag. And then all the votes get counted and they're like, it's not in the bag. But it's not a conspiracy, guys. It's just counting. So, Well, Barbara Comstock, tell people how they can follow you on social media and where else they can see your work and your writing and your activism.
Well, let me see. I am on Twitter. I also work with the National Council on Election Integrity. So I would encourage you to follow them. I guess, just forgetting what my Twitter handle, I think it's pretty much Barbara Comstock, or if you just put my name in, it'll pop up.
You'll find it.
And, very happy to be associated now and with the Republicans Against Trump folks that I think are going to have very effective work, in the swing states. And I do think that Tom Suozzi race was probably I think it was a bellwether. Republicans are trying to ignore it now, but he did what Trump doesn't allow Republicans did. He ran his own race. He did what he had to do. He wasn't always agreeing with Biden, but Republicans aren't allowed to do that. And that makes their life so much more difficult. And I know Republicans are now trying to say, oh, we knew he was going to win anyway, but they wouldn't have sent out snowplows on election day if they knew Suozzi was going to win.
Correct.
And correct. I did hear from, I think, a reliable source that told me they were told the weekend before that Mazzi, the Republican, was going to win by 4%. And they were, that's why Elise Stefanik and all those people went out and had their rally, because Elise wouldn't have shown up for a big rally saying the nation is watching and we're going to win this one if she thought they were going to lose by 8. So
she doesn't want the stink of failure on her.
Yeah, well, the polls have consistently, but when people show up and when, whatever the polls are saying, look, in 22, the polls didn't, they were trying to push this red wave. And I think there's a silent majority out there, too, even among MAGA world, particularly MAGA women, who are sick of this. They're sick of what's happened to their families, whether it's January 6th or their election denialism. And they may not tell anybody, but I've had people tell me this, like, don't tell anybody, but I did vote against him. And so whether it's not voting for him, leaving it blank, they can get their way to vote for Biden. Whatever it is, I think they're going to be in for a surprise, like those 77,000 Nikki Haley voters this week in those key areas where Trump lost by 11,000. And now he's told them permanently barred, we don't want you. Then he's told all the Romney people don't want you. And famously in Arizona, he has been so disgraceful to John McCain and the McCain family. There are plenty of Republicans who still love John McCain in Arizona. And when you're running a 50-50 race, it's mind-boggling that you would do that. But fortunately, the McCain family and Meghan McCain has reminded Carrie Lake, she remembers. So, I think we'll all be working hard on those efforts because I think democracy is at stake. Things like Ukraine and keeping our shores safe so our young men and women don't have to go overseas and keeping those alliances strong. So
you and I come from that era where we understood what Russia was.
Yeah, they were the evil empire. We're old enough to be defending Ronald Reagan when a lot of these Democrats that now quote him were attacking him. But to see on State of the Union night that they clapped for that, but then when President Biden switched over to say, do whatever the hell you want. We can't have that. And then they just sit there, and only Mitt Romney stands up.
Yeah, they just numb.
God bless Mitt, so.
It's a long road. Well, Barbara Comstock, thank you so much for coming on The Enemy's List today. I really appreciate your time. Great conversation. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Well, we have some new reporting coming out of The New Republic on Donald Trump's cabinet of horrors. And they've lined up a story from Alexander Nazarian, who's a friend, that is an enemies list all of its own. Christopher Rufo, Secretary of Education, Tucker Carlson, Secretary of State, and on and on and on. I recommend you read it because it's an absolute window into the insanity of what these people will do. Attorney General Laura Ingraham. All this incredible madness, okay? All this incredible compression of insanity in this article. tells you who these people are. It's a great roadmap. And so the article and Alexander are not on the enemies list, but all the people in there that they describe so brilliantly in this little rundown of who would be in the Trump cabinet, as I call them, Mordor bureaucrats. It's an absolutely perfect look at it. And they are, in fact, every single damn one of them on the enemies list. Thanks again for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.